All right, ladies. Up, 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 up.
This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. On Sunday, two intrepid wax techs from the U.S. ski team ventured out after the Lillehammer Norway World Cups to drive the new U.S. ski team wax truck to Central Europe, specifically Davos, Switzerland, for this weekend's races. In this impromptu and definitely unplanned podcast, I reached U.S. wax tech Tim Baukum on the phone as he rode shotgun on the E6 in Norway, headed toward the Swedish border crossing. Not to be left out, the driver at the time of the call was another wax tech veteran, Andrew Morehouse. Okay, here is the start of the interview.
Hello?
Hey, is this Tim?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Tim. This is Jason. Thank you for taking the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Thanks
for calling. So are you guys... Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding? I mean, like, I feel like we should have reached out to you guys a decade ago, but it's I feel like you're sworn to secrecy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, right.
God, the connection's really good. Are you in the bus right now?
Yeah, we're driving right now. We're on the E6, just south of Oslo, on our way toward the Swedish border. Well, we got a tip from the Canadians to just do a slow roll through, and they usually don't bother getting out to flag you down. So hopefully that works out.
So who is in the, if you can just kind of briefly intro yourself and, what you're involved, you know, how you're involved with the U.S. ski team and who else is along with you.
Yeah. I'm Tim Baukum and I live in Bozeman, Montana. This is my third year as a technician for the ski team in the World Cup. So, I coached in Bozeman for a while for Bridger Ski Foundation and in Sun Valley as well, and then started with these guys. And I'm with Andrew Morehouse, who is also in his third year, also lives in Bozeman, and worked for St. Lawrence University and also for Bridger Ski Foundation previously.
Well, I'm assuming you guys both have a European CDL at this point, commercial driver's license?
Yeah, so we both took an American Class A CDL driver's test. So we have Class A interstate CDLs that we got basically an international driving permit, which is essentially just the translation of your license into a bunch of different languages, is a guide for if you get pulled over here for an officer or whatever to look and see what you're allowed to be driving. So we didn't actually need European licenses, but we needed to have something that would be equivalent to the vehicle that we have here, which was a little bit challenging because the classifications are different in the U.S., so we basically ended up getting a Class A because it was easier to take a course and to have a truck to drive for your DMV test because you have to show up with your own vehicle. And outside of like applying to be a school bus driver and then bailing on them in the last minute or something, we had to basically take a course. It was pretty funny.
And you guys both passed?
Both passed, yeah. We took a driver's course in Montana and like a 40-year-old tractor trailer truck with 1.5 miles on it.
Well, where did you guys get your hands on that? Like, did the team rent it for you?
No, so it was this nonprofit right outside Bozeman that it's basically a truck driver training. It's like a career development place that has this option. They had a truck donated from Cisco back in the day, and so we paid some money and took a 19-hour driving course and used the truck for our tests. few weeks later.
So when you say, I mean, was it like a 18-wheeler rig or was it like a big U-Haul?
Yeah, it was a full tractor trailer, 18-wheeler.
So this is like a piece of cake then.
Yeah, this thing drives so nicely compared to, I mean, that, yeah, there was an old, really old truck, and you just ground the shit out of the gears every time you tried to shift. And this thing is, everything's computerized. It makes almost no sound. No, the engine's quiet. And, yeah, it's comfortable.
So there was no, like, drawing short straws to see who drove away from Lillehammer in case you guys kind of whacked into a Norwegian wax truck or something?
No, yeah. Actually, we decided Andrew's got pretty bad eyesight, so he took this daylight shift. The first half hour was in the daylight, and then the next four will be in the dark. But
well, how's it? I mean, it's 9 hours. It's definitely dark right now, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. It's been dark since four.
How's he doing?
He's doing well. The roads are well lit here, so.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I just don't want to be responsible for, like, the last thing Matt Wickham said to me, he was like, oh my gosh, they have like $600,000 of precious cargo. I don't want to generalize here, but like, what type of personality does it take to be a World Cup wax tech? Because my image is, you know, just, I feel like the sport sort of attracts type A people anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would say that probably we're a good mix of type A and type B personalities, which is, I think, very helpful a lot of the time. There's definitely the scientific approach and the artistic approach to a lot of the stuff that we do, and it's nice having a little bit of a mix in our staff, for sure.
Where do you fall on that spectrum?
Probably closer to the type B, but more middle. We're kind of, yeah, I think I can cross over both spectrums a little bit, but I would not consider myself type A personality.
And are you folks, I'm assuming, but I'll let you explain, are you folks responsible for specific athlete skis from World Cup to World Cup or throughout the whole season?
Yeah, basically we're assigned athletes, and athletes are assigned techs that we work with day to day. And that mostly means that we're in charge of the athletes and have knowledge of their skis and are responsible for making their skis on race day and training days. But also we, as a staff, are testing product and choosing waxes to test and everything as a staff. So it's probably a lot more teamwork, I would say, than a lot of the other staff that have maybe larger numbers. But at the same time, we do have a good interpersonal relationship with the athletes that we work with, just because, you know, every day are making skis for them and working with the industry to pick new skis and all that. So
okay, here's like a burning question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever wake up in the morning at a World Cup and you look out the window, or you lick your finger and stick it out the window and you're like, shit?
For sure. Yeah. Well, I would say that we encounter a lot of weather here, and so ends up, not much of it ends up being a surprise, but yeah, we had a couple days like that last weekend in Ruka, where you're just, yeah, you get there in the morning and you, it's just harder to find a place to start because it's a classic day and it's around zero and there's some sort of sensation maybe, and there's really dry snow up high and there's really wet, lazy snow in the lower parts of the course, and it's challenging, but it makes it fun, I think, that way. Otherwise, it'd get a little boring if it was extra blue skiing every day, at least for us.
It sounds like, yeah, I'm sure. And it sounds like this morning in Lillehammer, it was a pretty straight up kickwaxing day.
Yeah, it was. The classic sprint day, we had basically rails all week. It was super hard tracks and really nice classic skiing. And yesterday for the sprint, it got a little bit mealy, but still great conditions. And then today was another phenomenal day. Everyone was on kind of blue-violet hard wax all week long. And, yeah, it's really nice.
Okay, this is a geeky question, but this, you know, I think I'm probably serving the clientele well. People say thin to win. In your eyes at the World Cup level, like, what does that mean?
It depends on conditions, but it's totally true. You can see it, especially when the conditions are a little tricky. And good classic skiers, like I think Cindy's a good example. You see him oftentimes slipping a lot, but winning races because his skis are fast. He's able to hold his form even when his kick's on 100%. But yeah, I would say that at this level, it's very difficult to win pretty well with slow skis. So, thin to win is a pretty good mantra.
Like, let's talk a little bit bus here. Or I don't know, what do you guys refer to that thing as? Like, bus, wax trailer?
Truck, I think, is what we've kind of been... The wax truck, yeah. We still use wax cabin over the radio a lot because we're so used to that. But wax truck is what we like to call it. Yeah.
Does it have a nickname?
Not yet. I'm sure by the end of this drive we'll have named it though.
Okay. And is there any like wax truck envy at this point from the other nations?
Well, most. Countries have come in and checked it out, the other nations, and for sure a lot of them are, no one's come in and been like, you shouldn't have done that, or we were lucky enough to be one of the last bigger countries to get one, and so we had a lot of input from the Norwegians were really helpful in telling us what they would have done differently or something they wish they'd put in, and then our head wax tech Oleg worked really hard at with the company, Swedish company that made it, to kind of get everything dialed. So yeah, I think, I mean, it's smaller than a lot of the trucks for sure, but when you come in, you can just, we have the perfect amount of space for the people we have, and it's really well lit and well ventilated and has really good storage. So I think everyone who comes in is kind of jealous, I think, of how it's set up. Yeah.
And I'm sure you got, what time on a normal like work day do you guys have to get up for like a race morning?
Well, this weekend was particularly early. We had to be, the qualifier on Saturday was at 8:45. So we were at the venue at 4:45 maybe, or 5. But that's definitely abnormal, I would say.
So my question is, like, is there some super nice espresso machine built into this thing?
No, that was definitely talked about.
Oh.
The espresso machine and the kegerator, I think, are going to have to be later additions. Probably fundraising done by the wax staff.
What do you guys do for coffee?
The venue's got coffee. It's usually pretty marginal, but we actually have a water boiler and a French press in there, so we've been making some coffee.
Okay.
So that's been good.
Okay. I mean, French press is tolerable. Okay.
It is. Yeah. It's tough because it only makes a couple cups at a time, but
in all seriousness, I feel like, I know it's probably not NNF's mandate, but it's got to be somebody's mandate to like get you guys a pretty good espresso machine.
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, if anyone reads the article, really wants to donate a couple $1,000 to the U.S. Waxers.
Is there still space to like have it built in?
Yeah. I mean, we have a little shelf that has kind of water and the coffee maker, current coffee maker, and the boiler, and it has Sadie's flowers from Saturday on it. It's a nice little countertop space. It can be an industrial sized espresso machine for sure, but
okay, all right,
yeah.
Okay, well, that would be like one of my main concerns if I were ever in a position like that. It's like to be,
yeah.
And I know when you're on the road, you sort of like take the lowest common denominator. And like, for me, like instant coffee is fine, but it would be nice for you guys to be treated.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, we are treated well. Most venues have good setups, but
you know, I'm sure
that is one thing that having some consistency in the coffee is always nice.
Okay. So you guys have had a super successful, I mean, you know, Sadie's obviously had a great run the past two weekends. What does that do for the Waxers' morale?
Yeah, it's always really nice for us to start out like that. And you know, the first week we were here and we were trying to figure out the truck and all that. I think once we got those first races under our belt and had some good results, it was a little bit of a sigh that we had it all dialed, and it seemed like it was worth it to everybody who made the truck happen and all that. But in general, I think having good results, it makes us work harder every weekend. And it's awesome to see the athletes have that much success.
How many miles are on it? Like, you probably have to press a button to scroll through the windows, but does that thing have like 5,000 miles?
Yeah, I think there's only... not even. I think it only has like 2,500 kilometers on it or something.
Oh yeah, kilometers.
3,900 kilometers is the official reading. Yeah, so it's very new. It governs out at 90 km an hour because that's the max speed. Yeah, that we can drive in Europe. So it spent some time at 90K, but we haven't rallied it yet. It's tough with the cargo in the back. This will be our first year not being able to drive 150K an hour on the Autobahn. So we'll see.
No wonder it's going to take you guys like 2 days to get to Switzerland.
Yeah. Andrew and I know each other quite well, actually, so. We spent a lot of time together.
That's okay. It's more time for you guys to get to know one another. So
yeah, we went to college together, and then we're roommates in Bozeman. Got the same job at the same time.
And you guys are good. Well, you must be good friends. So
yeah, yeah.
How old are you? How old are you guys?
I just turned 31, and just 30. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Young, lots of life ahead of you. What a cool adventure for you guys at this time of your lives.
Yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a really fun job for sure.
Yeah, I got to say I'm a little envious. Okay, last question is for, you know, all these kids that are involved with Nordic skiing, some of them are sure, I'm sure, are like, oh my gosh, like I love the wax thing. I love that mental challenge and that combo of art and science that you were talking about. What should they be doing?
I think, you know, for me, I wasn't into that at all until I started doing some coaching after college. And you pretty quickly realize, I think, that it's it's probably the biggest thing you can do during the winter that can really help or really hurt your athlete's success. So I think if you just kind of embrace that and if you enjoy it, it can take you to a lot of cool places. it is sort of like a mini competition inside the main competition, which makes it kind of fun. And then I've worked with some awesome people in this job. So the current staff in particular is just a great group of people and a good mix of personalities and people from different countries. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I would say, you know, if you enjoy coaching and enjoy waxing, that it is a really fun job, and it is a good way to stay involved in the sport.
Well, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. And I'm
no problem.
Sorry that it was a little bit random, but I was like, oh,
yeah,
I got to catch these guys on their maiden voyage here. So, hey, best of luck and congratulations on a great 2 weeks. You guys have obviously done some great work.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, it's been fun. Ben, yeah, thanks for coming. It's our pleasure.
Okay. All right. We'll drive safely. And it's probably dark there.
Thanks. Yeah. Will do.
All right. Take care. Have a good evening.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. You too. See you. Bye.
I can imagine some higher ups on the U.S. ski team were stressing a bit. The bus wasn't due to arrive in Davos until Tuesday. I too was a bit anxious, but as far as I know, these two guys have impeccable driving credentials. Anyhow, I reached out again to Baucom on Monday for a quick check-in. It turns out the wax truck was in Germany.
Hello?
Yeah, hey, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm good. I thought, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I should do an update after I think Matt or someone posted a short little video clip of you guys like waving Bon Voyage from Lillehammer either yesterday or something.
Right.
Yeah. So just like a quick check-in. Where are you guys?
We're sort of by Pritzwalk, Germany, which is kind of north central, headed down towards Nuremberg. So we're making our way.
Okay.
Probably not the best timing, but we're figuring it out.
Is there any way to like hotwire the governor on that thing?
I wish. Yeah. It sucks going by the 130K signs and only being able to go 90, but yeah. Right now we're kind of on some back roads that we are recommended to take. So hopefully that'll give us a little time. Yeah.
One thing, and it's noticeable. I mean, that thing is really quiet. Like you're actually in the cab right now.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We're driving. It's super quiet.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like an airtight chamber. I mean, like a studio.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
It's really nice. The windows are all double pane and, it's great.
Any sketchy border crossings?
No, they've been good so far. We, haven't been hassled. And we had to fill out a few things to get on the ferry to Germany that we had to dig for some tax ID numbers and that sort of thing. But, other than that, it's been pretty smooth.
I suppose you're in Norway, or were in Norway. You know, you're cruising through Europe.
Yeah.
Where skiing is a big deal.
Yeah.
Are people honking anything?
We got some stares at a gas station from people in ski clothes that I think they had been at the races in Lillehammer. One was wearing, like, maybe a volunteer-type jacket, or maybe it was just, like, a World Cup Lillehammer merch jacket or something. But other than that, no, we haven't had any heckling or anything.
So do you think for a moment at the gas station they were sort of hoping that Erik Bjornsson would step out?
Yeah, probably. I think they were looking around to see if we were magically transporting all the athletes in there. But
yeah,
pretty disappointing when it's just
you two
scrappy bums coming out of the truck.
Sounds like you guys are well on your way and like totally safe.
Yeah. I think we're going to probably put in a good push this evening And then probably get up really early, maybe 5 or 6, and try to get there early afternoon tomorrow. So we'll see.
Okay.
Though I think the Austria and the Swiss border crossings are going to be the two that might take longer than we think. So we're going to try to plan for that, and hopefully they go well. But
what is, like, what sort of beta did you get that those might be a little more thorough?
Well, we have to, for both of those, we have to pick up sort of like vignettes, but they're for truckers. They're like these boxes that are basically like an easy pass type thing. And you have to apply for them and then kind of wait around, and they need all the trucking ID info. And then in Switzerland, you have to pay taxes on all the goods you have, and then you collect the money back when you leave. So
we have to drive
through the border. Yeah, we have to drive through the border, and we're supposed to pay a certain percentage of all the inventory that we have and then get it back when we leave, as long as we haven't sold any of it while we were in Switzerland, is kind of their reasoning.
Gotcha. And so, like, stuff
their
is
reasoning.
All, like, you have a manifest that's, like, all, you know, itemized with all the contents?
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's obviously not kept up to date, but it's a pretty, you know, it's got pretty much everything and kind of the value of the stuff that's in there and all that, so.
You guys carry all the athlete skis, right, with you?
Yes. Yeah, we have all of them except for a pair each that they're training on tomorrow. So,
okay.
Or today.
And I'm sure some people carry more skis than others, but I remember reading something last year, like Simi has like 40 pair of skate skis. So
yeah,
like that must take up a ton of space on the manifest and
for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Weighs heavy on the taxes.
Yeah, it's a little hard to kind of, yeah, keep total track of that. But we kind of, I think the manifest says like, I don't know, 500 pairs of Fisher skis.
Oh, boy.
Whatever, 200 pairs of Rossignol skis. I think it's kind of sort of general, but yeah. And it's stuff that's hard to really put a value on because the athletes don't pay for the skis. We don't pay for them, but they're worth a lot of time taking and a lot of money to somebody, to the companies and to the value of the market, I guess. But yeah. Yeah. So we're, yeah.
Did you guys crash at a hotel last night? Look, it's like you're being grilled. This is worse than like going through customs. Did you guys crash at a hotel?
Yeah, we actually found it was pretty great hotel for, it had a big bus parked spot, and it was a Scandic right on the side of the highway in Gothenburg, Sweden. So it was easy, which was nice. We've definitely had in the past, even with the cargo van that we used to have, struggled to, you know, find parking for it and stuff late at night, pulling into a hotel. So this was actually pretty nice. But I think Central Europe definitely is more challenging. Like Germany, I think we've had a really hard time ending up in like small alleyways. And Andrew and I stayed at a hotel that was built in like 1430 a couple of years ago. And it had the parking, the little back alley parking was not, conducive for our van and trailer. We had to unhook the trailer and roll it out by hand.
Right. It would have been good for like a goat drawn cart back in the day, I suppose.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to make sure you guys are, like, super well taken care of because, you know.
Yeah.
The skis are obviously, we want them in good hands. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, thanks for the update, and continue to travel safely and don't speed. Yep. All right. Best of luck this weekend.
Yeah. You too. Thanks, Jason. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Nordic Nation.